Well, children, I think if I asked you, when we started this series on Joshua, I want you to tell me one story that you know about Joshua and what takes place. I think you would tell me about Joshua and the Battle of Jericho. It's a story that we know well. It's a story that we sing in children's songs. It's a story that we sing in adult songs about Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho and how those walls came tumbling down. It's a wonderful story. It's a story we teach our children. It's a story that even those who are casually related to Christianity know something about. They know about Joshua and the walls falling down. But I think what we often forget about the story of Joshua and the Battle of Jericho, that while this was a wonderful blessing for the people of God, it was God's judgment upon the wicked. It was a blessing for God's people as they would go in and be given this city and it would be devoted to destruction, but it was God's judgment to come upon the unbelievers. The story of Joshua and the Battle of Jericho is a warning. A warning that unless we are given over to the God of Israel, we too will suffer the same fate as the people in Jericho. Tonight, we look at this story to remind ourselves not only of God's blessing to His people, but also as a warning for those who are yet outside the people of God, that they must come in, be brought into Israel, be brought into the church to know the blessing of God and of His care for His people. The story begins with this somewhat strange reference in chapter 5:13 about this man that meets Joshua, a man standing before him with a drawn sword. This little story belongs as the precursor to the Battle of Jericho. It belongs with the story, and again, it's given to, first of all, encourage Joshua, but to remind him of who's really in charge. Joshua's by Jericho. He lifts up his eyes and looks, and behold, a man standing before him with a sword drawn in his hand. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen anyone with a sword drawn in their hand, but it is a fearful sight. I've trained with a sword, and to see someone with a sword come back and that sword drawn and ready for action is a fearful thing. Joshua sees this one with this sword drawn, and he asks a very natural question. Look, are you for us or are you for our enemies? Joshua wants to know, should I be afraid? Should I draw my sword as well? What's going on here? And we have this rather strange answer. Joshua's question, are you for us or for our adversaries? And the man's answer is no. No. Why no? He says, I am the commander of the army of the Lord. You see, Joshua was looking too narrowly at what was going on. Joshua was a skilled commander preparing for battle, but he was looking for someone to come and help him to take Jericho. And he sees this man with a drawn sword. Are you going to come alongside of us? Are you going to help us? Or must we fight you? And the answer is, Joshua, you've got it all wrong. I am not here to help you. I am the commander of the Lord's army. I will not come alongside you. I will fight for you. That's why he says, no, it's not that I'm either with you or with the enemy. I'm the commander over all. I'm not going to come next to you and be an ally for you. I am your commander. And I will do the fighting. And I will take the battle. Now I have come, the commander of the Lord's army. And Joshua, now recognizing the powerful presence that stands in front of him, falls to the ground in worship. What does my Lord say to his servant? And the commander of the Lord's army says, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy. Who was this commander, children, that came and confronted Joshua? It was none other than the presence of God Himself. The commander of the Lord's army, God Himself in His holy presence. We hear the echoes. We hear the echoes that Moses heard. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Just as God came to Moses in a burning bush, God's very presence, now God comes in the figure of this man with the drawn sword. I am the commander. Take off your sandals, for again you are standing on holy ground. A recognition of God's holiness. God himself stands before Joshua as a reminder that God is a holy God. God is a righteous God. And this commander will now come and vindicate his righteousness on the unrighteous. He will vindicate his righteousness on the people of Canaan. They have been unholy to the Lord. They have been uncaring about the Lord. And now God comes in all of his glory and all of his majesty and all of his holiness and rightly comes to destroy the people who have risen up against him, to destroy anyone who would stand against his people. God comes not to come alongside Joshua, but to go ahead of Joshua to fight the battle for him. The presence of God in his holiness. Take off your sandals. The place where you are standing is holy. And God gives instructions to Joshua. Rather strange instructions. Again, Joshua is a good commander. Joshua is a warrior. And Joshua knows how to prepare for a battle. So he says, what shall I do? And the instructions are this. I've given Jericho into your hand, its king, its mighty men's. You are to march around the city, all the men of war, going around the city once, and you shall do this for 6 days. The priests will be there with the trumpets. The ark will be there as well. But to prepare for the victory, all I want you to do is march around the city. Now that's a strange instruction to prepare for a victory. You would think it would be things like, well, sharpen your swords, prepare for battle, organize your troops, get ready to advance. But it's simply march around the city. Again, as a reminder that God would be the one who is in control. God would be the one who would give the victory to his people. They would not even have to raise a sword, have to raise a spear. But God would go ahead if they would simply follow his instructions, even when the instructions didn't seem to make any sense. Children, if you wanted to get into church tonight and the door was locked, and I said, you know what you got to do? All you got to do is walk around the building. He said, Reverend Niemeyer, that doesn't make any sense. How is walking around the building going to get me inside? Oh, no, just do it. That's the kind of instruction Joshua got. The commander says to him, just walk around. Just have the mighty men walk around. Walk around the city. It's an almost passive approach to remind them of God's power. They are to simply obey whether it makes sense to them or not. It doesn't make sense that walking around a city will guarantee victory. It doesn't make sense that walking around a city will get them inside. Now, we know what's coming. We've heard the story before. We know that after 6 days and the seventh day, the walls are going to fall down. They don't know that. All they have is this strange instruction from God. I'm going to give you the victory. Walk around the city. Many times today, God still comes to us with simple instructions. But that seems strange to us. The instructions that don't seem to make any sense at times. God comes to us and he says, you want to prepare for the week to come. You want to be ready to face the challenges of the week. Then this is what I'm going to tell you to do. Go at the beginning of the week and come into my presence and worship with God's people.
Now, how does that fit being ready for the rest of the week? Well, God knows that when we are here, we are strengthened by His Word. We are strengthened by the communion of the saints. We are built up in our walk with Him and then prepared to go into the week to come. But on the surface, it seems like a strange choice. God says, do you want to be content in life? Do you want to have enough physical blessings in life? And this is what you got to do. You got to give away the first 10% of everything you have. Now, that seems like a strange instruction. How in the world does giving away the first portion make us have enough? And yet it's God's instruction. Whether it makes sense to us or not. We want to have strong marriages. And so God says very simply, you must marry in the Lord. And we say, yeah, but my boyfriend, my girlfriend is such a nice person. Such a nice guy, such a beautiful girl. But if they're not a believer, we're starting on the wrong foot. God's instruction is so simple. Whether we see it or not, God comes again and again. Simply follow my word. Simply obey the commands I have given. They are not difficult. They are not hard. They are not hard to figure out. God clearly gives the instruction to Joshua, march around the city. God clearly gives the instruction to us, do things my way. When you gather for worship, worship me in the splendor of my holiness. Worship is not about man, about who we are, about what we can do. Worship is about God and what He has done. It's so simple. It's so obvious. Simply following in the ways of the Lord. Faithful obedience. Following after God, following after His instruction. This was the way of victory for Joshua and the Israelites. This is the way for victorious living for us as well. Not having to invent our own ways, but simply following God's ways, whether they make sense or not. It didn't make sense for the commander to say, walk around the city. That's not how you take a city. But they followed. And what happened? They went around the first day, went back to camp. They went around the second day, went back to camp. Verse 15, on the seventh day they rose early at the dawn of the day and marched around the city in the same manner seven times. It was only on that day they marched around the city seven times. At the seventh time, when the priests had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Their shout was not to make the walls fall down. Their shout was to be an affirmation that God was fighting for them. You now shout for victory. The walls are still standing, but you now shout for victory, for God has given the city to you. And everything inside is to be devoted to the Lord for destruction. The people are obedient, and what happens, children? The walls fall down. They do it God's way, and it works out exactly the way God had said. That He would fight for them, that they wouldn't lift a sword, but He would go ahead of them, and the walls fall down, and they all go straight in. But God had said, as I fight for you, as the victory is mine, there are some particular instructions you need to follow. Verse 17, the city and all that is within shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. And the text here uses a very particular word, the word chedem, which means to be devoted to the Lord completely, totally. To be given over to the Lord, not to be used for anything else, but to be given to Him. I think that makes sense because God had the victory. It all belonged to Him. So He comes, He gets the victory, and He says, now don't take anything for yourself, because the victory is mine. And so they devote the city to destruction. Now that's sometimes pretty hard to understand and hard to explain to people. Verse 21,
Then they devoted all in the city to destruction, men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys with the edge of the sword. They killed everyone. It's a bloody story. It's a gruesome story. Joshua at the Battle of Jericho, and they killed them all. How do we make sense of that? This call to devote them to destruction. Is God being vindictive here? Is God being capricious here? That he simply picks this city and says, I'm going to devote them all to destruction. I'm going to kill them all. No, it's not a city of God being quick to vengeance. We can go back to read from Genesis 15 how God, 400 years earlier, had talked about giving this land, Canaan, to his people, but he would wait because the sin of the Amorites had not yet reached its fullness. God waited 400 years before coming with this destruction. We cannot charge God with being hasty in his wrath. He waits and waits and waits until finally the sin of the Amorites reaches its fullness, and then God comes with vengeance. And everyone inside is devoted to destruction. It is all given over to him. God is just. God is righteous. God is holy. He is patient. He is long-suffering. And we're so thankful for that. That he is that way with us. Patient and long-suffering with us, who are often willful children, not wanting to do things God's way, wanting to go our own way. Sometimes with our own kids, we get impatient. We tell them, don't do this, and they do it. We tell them, don't do it again, they do it again. And we get impatient. God patiently, lovingly, again and again, calls us back to himself, even though we do the same thing. We have our own besetting sins. Those sins that we don't reject, but those sins that we even lovingly go back to. And yet God says, put that away, put that away, put that away. And again, he comes with the call. He is patient. He is long-suffering. But make no mistake, there is an end of God's patience. And that's what the story of Jericho teaches us. God waited 400 years, but he did come in destruction on the Amorites. And then everything was devoted to the Lord. Everything was given up unto him in destruction. Everything! Not quite everything. We read, last half of verse 17, only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. Everything devoted to destruction. Everything given over unto God, except Rahab. Now why? Why Rahab? Well, we read that she did hide the messengers. We know that's true. But if you think back, what had Rahab done in that action? She had already in that action separated herself from the Canaanites. And she had already devoted herself unto the Lord. Not for destruction, but for his complete service. She made a break with the people in which she lived. She made a break with the Canaanites, with the Amorites, and she chose to align her lot with the people of God. She was already devoted unto him and need not be devoted to destruction once again. That's the glorious message of the gospel in Jericho. Yes, God comes with destruction, but for those who are already devoted to him, for those who have already given all that they have over to him. And that's what Rahab did. She was breaking with her people. She was under a death sentence if they found out. She gave it all up for the sake of the Lord and devoted herself wholly unto him. Complete devotion. Total devotion. Not devotion unto destruction, but devotion unto life. Life with the people of God. And that's That's the same two choices. That's the same two ways that we still face today. That's the point of Psalm 1. That's why I read Psalm 1 this evening. Two ways laid out for us. The way of the righteous, the way of the wicked. The righteous, like trees by streams of water, producing fruit in season, their leaf does not wither, whatever they do prospers. The wicked, not so. Not so. Like chaff that the wind blows away. Two choices. Two ways. The righteous, the wicked. Devoted to destruction, devoted unto life. There's no middle way. We so often want to find the middle way. We'll be sort of devoted to God. We'll be sort of doing things God's way. Oh, in this particular part of our life, yes, we're all for God and everything's great. But over here, we still want to do things our way. I still want my own way. I want to follow my own counsel, not God's counsel. We want to be in the middle, sort of devoted. Neither giving ourselves wholly over to God or in fear of judgment. But there is no middle. There's no third way. Either we commit ourselves to following God in every area of our life, in our family life, our home life, our work life, our school life, our devotional life, our financial life, everything unto God. Or we find ourselves in the camp of the Amorites, having everything taken away. Total destruction to devotion. Total devotion to destruction unto the Lord. That's the choice laid before you this evening. Halfway doesn't count. Now, we know our actions, our results will only be half perfect, never be perfect like God wants. But what's our devotion? Is our devotion wholly and completely to doing it God's way? We know we'll fail along the way, but we don't start half-hearted. We must start wholehearted. Wholehearted devotion unto our God. Like Rahab, who aligned herself with God's people, and as a result, she is saved. She's brought out with her father and her mother and her brothers and all who belong to her, and they then dwell with Israel. The text says, to this day, they continue with the people of God. Not going back to the Amorites, not going back to Canaan, not going back to the old ways. Not a halfway devotion, but complete devotion to the God of Israel, the God who gives life. As you reflect upon the choices you have made this past week, as you reflect upon the decisions you have to make in the week to come, are you devoted unto God? Not a half-hearted allegiance, not a we'll do it if it's convenient, but a complete devotion to God's ways. Even when they don't make sense. Even when they're like walking around the city to have victory. God comes to you tonight. He says, follow my instruction. Do it my way. Be totally, completely devoted unto me. Left to ourselves, we cannot do that. We need the power of God's Spirit to enliven us, to convict us, to encourage us. Pray tonight, pray in the week to come, that God's Spirit enliven you, that He guide you, that He direct you in the paths of righteousness, devoted unto Him. The only other option is devoted to destruction. May God give us strength to follow in His way. Let's pray together.